Welcome back to Oblivion Agenda. I'm your host, Mike Adams. Be sure to check out all the other episodes at oblivionagenda.com. The videos are free. And thank you for joining me. In this episode, we're talking about the requirements for human life on Earth. Just going to go through what it takes for humans to live on this planet. Kind of overview that, but get into a few details where it really matters so that you understand how these systems are being attacked to destroy human life on Earth. In fact, to destroy not just humans, but the entire biosphere as we know it. So in summary, here's what we need to survive on this planet. We've got to have sunlight, obviously energy for plants and warmth and all these other things. Sunlight also, of course, warms the oceans and provides energy for the phytoplankton in the oceans. If we didn't have warmth of the oceans, we wouldn't have water evaporation. We wouldn't have rain in the clouds that rains on the land, obviously. It's part of the entire cycle of water on our planet. So we have to have sunlight. We have to have liquid water. We have to have large oceans for that hydrologic cycle to really function. We have to have warmth because obviously we can't live on a frozen ice ball planet. We have to have carbon dioxide. We have to have atmospheric oxygen. That's what we're breathing. We have to have photosynthesis functioning, which also requires carbon dioxide and sunlight. We need genetic integrity of the crops. We have to have fertility so that we can have the continuation, sustainability of the species. And we have to have sexual reproduction, which means we have to have mothers and fathers reproducing, having babies, healthy babies that themselves can reproduce later. Now, I know this maybe sounds basic, but all these things are under attack. In fact, that's what we're going to look at here. Globalists are working to destroy every one of these things. It's all part of the Oblivion agenda that I'm talking about here. They want to dim the sun. We've talked about the projects of polluting the skies. They want to freeze the earth. They say warming is bad and cooling is good. They want more ice, for example, instead of liquid water. They want to lower the oceans, which would shrink the size of the oceans rather than expanding the habitat of aquatic ecosystems. They want to eliminate carbon dioxide, which by itself, if they were to eliminate CO2, from the atmosphere, it would collapse the entire planet just almost instantly. Everything would die just from that alone. They want to reduce photosynthesis by dimming the sun, which means impairing food production and impairing plants, reducing the ability of plants to produce oxygen, because they want to lower the oxygen concentration in the atmosphere in order to asphyxiate humans and other mammals. They want to reduce rainforests and plant life, reduce human fertility, alter the genes of food crops, and mutilate the reproductive organs of children through transgenderism indoctrination and chemical castration strategies involving herbicides such as atrazine. And by physically maiming children through, you know, transgenderism and all this LGBT indoctrination, we'll focus on the transgender part, they render those children to be unable to ever conceive, to ever sustain the human population ever again. Those individuals are taken out of the gene pool, essentially, which is what the globalists want. Now, when you become aware that this is what globalists are trying to do, because everything I just listed there, you can easily verify that that's what's happening. Once you come to realize that, if you're a rational person, if you have any understanding of science or reality, you might think, well surely all these scientists understand that they're pushing mass suicide. Why would they do that? Has humanity become some kind of bizarre suicide cult? Well, the answer, which is what this presentation is all about, is no. Humanity itself is not, I mean, the individuals in humanity are not all signed up for some kind of suicide cult, but many of them have signed up for a terraforming program to alter Earth's atmosphere, to collapse the biosphere. And they want depopulation all around the world. This is openly talked about now. But in order to achieve that, it comes down to terraforming. And this is a big point that I think is worth explaining as a tangent. If you were some kind of mad, evil entity and you wanted to kill most humans on planet Earth, it would be a bloody mess to try to go in and, let's say, carry out some act of violence against each individual. It's even if you're an evil person or some kind of evil entity, it still takes a lot of effort to kill everybody one by one. Wouldn't it be more clever if you're evil and you can influence things to get humanity to kill itself. That's what's going on. They've convinced humanity to commit a kind of suicide via terraforming. Through the terraforming, the atmosphere is altered, the sunlight is dimmed, photosynthesis is shut down, the food webs collapse, and then you end up with mass starvation, famine, social unrest, political collapse, economic collapse, disease, and pestilence. You know, basically the four horsemen of the apocalypse, okay? This is what they're unleashing. And they're doing it on purpose. They are trying to murder life as we know it on this planet. It's actually part of a plan of human extermination. So you might say, well, how do you know there's influence from non-Earth entities who are pushing for this program? And part of the answer is, first of all, because any intelligent, informed human being who had compassion for humans wouldn't participate in this program. Why would you want to kill off all your fellow humans? But maybe that's not a good enough answer for a lot of people. So what we can do, actually, is we can reverse engineer the endpoint goals of terraforming to see what kind of atmosphere is this system trying to create? What kind of planet is being created through geoengineering and terraforming? And then we can reverse engineer with the question asking what kind of humanoid being would be compatible with that atmosphere and that biosphere. So that's what we're going to do right now as an experiment. Let's reverse engineer where this is going and just see, using reason and common sense, what kind of biological being would be the result of all this. Through this terraforming effort, they're creating a planet with less sunlight, a lower atmospheric oxygen, smaller oceans, a colder climate, a colder planet with more ice, infertile soils, and the elimination of native Earth species. What kind of being does that describe? What's interesting to me is that they're not describing a planet that's like Earth. They're describing a planet that's more like Mars. They're describing a planet that's farther from the sun than Earth. Obviously, less sunlight means farther from the sun, if the sun is the same size as our sun. So farther away from the sun than Earth. Lower atmospheric density of oxygen implies less gravity, which implies a smaller planet. In other words, a smaller planet would have less atmospheric density because there's less gravity to pull the atmosphere down to, you know, sea level or ground level. Thus, on a smaller planet like Mars or a similar size, which has 38% of the gravity of Earth, you would have significantly less oxygen density at sea level, even if oxygen made up the same percentage of composition of the atmospheric chemistry. So gravity actually determines atmospheric pressure or barometric pressure. I actually like to call it just density altitude. That's a term I'm familiar with. So density altitude is really just describing the pressure of the atmosphere at your current location. So the density altitude would be less on a smaller planet, which means less oxygen saturation. And that's what's being really constructed during this terraforming, or engineered is a better term. So in addition to a smaller planet that's farther from the sun, it would also be a colder, drier planet. Because remember, the terraforming that's underway right now is to make the planet colder. They want to bring in an ice age. Warming is bad. Remember, they want to block the sun and they want less moisture. They don't want rainforest. They don't want warmth to have evaporation and rainfall. They don't want lush green areas. What they want is a cold, dry, dead kind of planet, or at least more dead than what we have here on Earth. Now, this implies very much a more harsh environment than what we have here on Earth. A smaller planet that's farther from the sun would have much longer seasons than Earth's seasons because of just plain orbital dynamics, you know, Newtonian laws of motion. So when you have a planet that's orbiting the sun in an elliptical orbit, and, you know, all orbits are at least slightly elliptical, not perfectly circular, you have seasonal variation, especially if you have an axis tilt of the planet relative to the orbital plane. And so this seasons, what they offer in terms of evolution of species on that planet is a season creates a very harsh, kind of like an IQ test for the survivability of the species, the adaptability to be able to survive very, very harsh, long winters. And the longer the winter, the more intelligent that species has to be in order to survive it. In fact, a planet that has the orbit of Mars could have a winter that is 2 to 3 Earth years in duration. So that's a very harsh winter. Instead of just, you know, 4 or 5 months, depending on where you live on planet Earth, or maybe only 3 months, imagine having a winter that lasts 3 years. How much planning would it take to survive a 3-year winter? You know, you'd have to plan your food supplies. You'd have to really stock up. You'd have to be a survivor. You'd have to build tools. You'd have to be able to manipulate your environment in very clever ways. And this is what this species that we're talking about would have had to do to survive a planet that exhibits the properties that are the end goals of current terraforming of planet Earth. And interestingly, one Mars year is 687 Earth days. So, you know, a Mars year is almost twice as long as an Earth year, and which means that a Mars winter is almost twice as long as an Earth winter, which means a Mars, a being that evolved on a planet like Mars would have to have really twice as much resourcefulness to make it through a winter that is twice as long, you know, much more harsh than Earth winter. So what this means is that as a cosmic principle of truth, if you believe in natural selection, survival of the fittest, regardless of whatever else you believe about the origin of the species, you know, the origin of the universe, divine beings, and so on, it's clear that in order to survive a harsh planet, a species would have to be of extremely high intelligence. And so even if we look at Earth, climate versus intelligence, if you look at the average IQs on nations all around the world of our planet, you find that there are much lower than average IQs in nations that are close to the equator, where the climate is easier, where you don't have harsh winters. So throughout much of Central America, parts of South America, but especially Africa and India, you have very low IQs compared to, on average, you know, there are very capable people from those regions, but it's not the average. Whereas when you have regions that are either very far south, cold regions of South America, or very far north, such as Canada, for example, or much of Western Europe and, you know, Russia and China, the northern regions, you find above average IQs. This is just straight up science. And what this is indicating is that there's a requirement. If you're going to survive, or your ancestors would survive a very harsh climate, they would have to be very intelligent in terms of planning and preparedness and tools manipulation in order to survive those harsh climates. Because of what we know about the terraforming goal of where they're trying to take Earth, we know that the non-Earth species that is actually planning this came from a planet that had much more extreme winters and more harsh climate, meaning that they had adapted extremely high intelligence that would be far above the average intelligence of any of us here on Earth. And that's something we should acknowledge up front. We're dealing with very high intelligence that is capable of things that we can't quite imagine. Let's move on to the reverse engineering here. So start with dimming the sun. If they're going to dim the sun, that means they're creating, they're terraforming Earth to be a planet that mimics a planet which was farther away from the sun or had less sunlight than our current present day Earth. This would require much larger eyes. So if you're taking a bipedal biological, you know, specimen that needs to be able to perceive its surrounding using optical hardware, i.e. eyes, then this species would have to have much larger eyes, larger pupils, and so on, because sunlight is less abundant on that planet. In addition, the dim sunlight would require pale skin in order to absorb more ultraviolet rays for vitamin D synthesis. Vitamin D is a common requirement for carbon-based life forms. And vitamin D is needed by all mammalian species, by the way, and it's produced by some. For example, dogs produce their own vitamin D, but humans do not. There is a metabolic cost to producing your own vitamin D, so there are trade-offs. But you can make vitamin D through ultraviolet radiation exposure, sunlight. Vitamin D is manufactured in your skin, and then it's absorbed through your skin and processed by your kidneys and so on. But you have to allow the sunlight through your skin based on how much sunlight you're exposed to. In other words, people who are from Africa, the reason they have dark skin on Earth is because there's so much sunlight, they need protection from ultraviolet radiation to block the genetic mutations caused by excessive UV exposure. So they have sunblock in their skin. The melanin in dark skin is a sunblock protective mechanism. Whereas when you have fair-skinned individuals from northern regions of, let's say, northern Europe, they're very white, very pale white. Why is that? Because they need more sunlight. They can't block the sun because they're getting so little sun anyway that their cancer risk goes up unless they get more vitamin D via sunlight exposure. So the skin pigmentation actually tells you where your ancestors are from on Earth. And this is why Hispanics, for example, have what you might call brown skin, because they have, you know, some sunlight exposure from places like Mexico, but not as much exposure as people who live in the more harsh regions or equatorial regions of Africa, for example. If you're going to think about an exobiological species that lives on a planet that has relatively little sunlight, they would have to have not only large eyes, but also very pale skin in order to absorb ultraviolet radiation. In addition, they would have no head hair, because head hair on Earth is actually used to protect yourself from radiation from the sun. So the reason we have hair, well, I mean, there are some anthropological behavioral science reasons as well, but the primary reason is simply to protect your bald head from excessive sunlight radiation. Well, if you live on a planet that's relatively dim in terms of sunlight, you don't need hair to protect your head. Now, in addition, we've talked about how lower density altitude or lower atmospheric concentration of oxygen very likely implies a smaller planet with less gravity. Remember, gravity creates atmospheric pressure. So if you have less atmospheric pressure of oxygen, i.e. less density altitude or oxygen saturation at a given pressure, then you can infer that this is a smaller planet with less gravity. Remember, Mars has 38% of the gravity of Earth, roughly speaking. I mean, it varies across the terrain a little bit, but roughly it's 38% averaged out. So a lower gravity than Earth would mean you don't need the stockiness of Earth. You don't need the muscularity of an Earth being. You would tend to develop beings who are taller, who are thinner, who are more lanky looking, who are good at manipulating tools. They might have more than 5 fingers, for example, and they would not need extremely high muscle density or even bone density in order to navigate their own environments. So, you know, skeletal structure would appear to us to be very thin, and muscular density would also be very thin. And by the way, that also means that if those beings were to visit planet Earth, they would have a very difficult time. Earth would seem suffocating to them, that it would seem to have way too much atmospheric pressure. They would feel like they're swimming in soup. They'd feel crushed by the gravity. They would not feel at home on Earth the way it is. It would require a tremendous amount of adjustment. Now, let's talk about manual dexterity and fingers. So, you know, there are some humans that are born with 6 fingers. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's true. There are humans that are born with, you know, 6 fingers on one hand. And there have been scientific tests that look at how well they are able to tie their shoelaces just using one hand. And it turns out that if you have 6 fingers, you can become very proficient at tying your shoes with one hand because you've got an extra finger. And those fingers are all usable, by the way. It's not like it's just hanging there limp. Having 6 fingers makes you better with tools, especially with the fine manipulation, fine motor coordination of tools that or inventing tools or building systems that would enhance your adaptability and survivability in a harsh climate. So we should not be surprised that an exobiological from a very challenging planet that has a very harsh, extreme, long winter, for example, that has a much colder climate with less plant life than what we have on Earth, that species would very likely have more than 5 fingers as we currently have, most of us, on planet Earth. This manual dexterity especially with thin fingers that are more, like, less stocky, but more dexterous, you could say, are going to be a very strong survival advantage to that species. Now, what have I described here? A species with large eyes, a species without the necessary head hair, a species that is tall and lanky, that has very pale skin, that likely has more than 5 fingers because they live in a very harsh climate requiring lots of manual dexterity and creation of tools and creation of clothing. For example, they have to stay warm during the harsh winters and so on. What am I describing? Well, this appears to be describing what common pop culture refers to as the grays, the gray beings that have been depicted in many different movies and you know, personal testimony and things like that. But depending on who you believe, there are a lot of different variations in what's been reported by witnesses in terms of exobiologicals. You know, you're free to believe whatever you want. All I'm describing here is the likely kind of being that would be compatible with the terraforming that is now underway on planet Earth. Because let's look at this slide. The native species of a planet reflects the planet's properties. If you look at the native Earth species, our ancestors, Homo sapiens, they had dark skin to protect against the intense sunlight. And by the way, all our ancestors came from Africa, according to modern science and the anthropological record. So we're all Africans in terms of our ancestry. We all had dark skin if you go back enough generations. We all have stocky construction due to the high gravity. So we have high bone density. We have high muscular density because we have to be able to manipulate our environment. We have to lift water. We have to lift food. We have to lift our baby children. We have to manipulate tools and, you know, gather food or hunt for food or all these things, build fires, build shelter. And these things require muscles that are, you know, proportional to the gravity that we experience here on Earth, which is considered, it's high gravity for compared to a lot of planets that are out there. I mean, I know we just call it 1G because Earth is our standard, but Earth's gravity, again, Mars is only 38% of Earth. You know, Mars was probably a thriving planet full of life at one time. But those, i.e. Martians, they would not have had to have the same bone density and muscle density as modern day Earthlings because the gravity was much less. And every time NASA sends astronauts out into space, what happens? When they don't have gravity, they start to lose their bone density and they have muscle atrophy and many other problems. I mean, their heads become more spherical. When they come back from space, they literally have trouble walking on Earth. And this is a widely documented fact. I mean, maybe you've never heard this before, but it's part of the record of astronauts. Many astronauts cannot walk when they return to Earth because they've been in zero gravity too long and they've lost the muscle density and the bone density in order to function here. So when we look at ancient humans or Homo sapiens, what we see is a biological specimen that is compatible with Earth the way Earth should be. With sunlight, you know, strong sunlight, strong gravity, a dense atmosphere, all these things. But now, if we look at where they're trying to take Earth with terraforming, dimming the sun, all these things we've talked about, then you get a biological being that does not resemble humans or Homo sapiens. And that's really a huge clue in all of this. What kind of planet are they creating through this terraforming effort by dimming the sun and destroying life and reducing the temperature, the warmth of the planet, freezing the planet, you know, genetic manipulations and all these things that are happening? They're creating a planet that's not compatible with humans as we exist today. They're creating a planet that's compatible with something quite different, and it's actually not that difficult to figure out what kind of being that would be, or at least the physical properties of that being. Now, they can't change the gravity of Earth, but they can change the oxygen saturation in the atmosphere by killing off plant life, and that is part of what they're doing. But it does mean that whoever lives here on Earth in the future, whether it's humans or some other post-human species, they're going to have to get used to Earth gravity. So from that point of view, I should mention that, you know, non-Earth civilizations obviously have many millions of years of genetic engineering, science behind them, and they can use hybridization techniques, and they can also use just plain old genetic modification of their own species to create beings that would be more comfortable on this planet and this gravity. Now, here's what I find interesting is that when we use this deduction and reasoning to reverse engineer the kind of being that would be compatible with the kind of climate that's being created through terraforming of Earth, That appears to line up quite closely with eyewitness reports of close encounters. So I don't know if you believe that people have seen aliens or touched aliens or have been abducted by aliens or what have you. A lot of stories out there. Some of them might be true. Many of them certainly are not. Nevertheless, it seems especially notable to me that many of the stories that appear to be the most credible stories from the history of close encounters describe beings that fit almost perfectly, the kind of beings that are compatible with Earth after it is terraformed in the ways that we can now observe it is being terraformed. I find that especially interesting. That's really strong support for the fact that this is going on and that the end goal of this is not being driven by humans. If humans wanted to create utopia for Earth, they would really work hard to create a planet or to support the planet as it is now, because it's naturally compatible with Homo sapiens and human beings the way we are today. You wouldn't want to drastically alter the atmospheric concentration of oxygen. You wouldn't want to eliminate carbon dioxide because it's part of our ecosystem. It's part of our food web. You wouldn't want to dim the sun because we need sun to thrive in the way that we are built. For example, again, pale skin, vitamin D synthesis to prevent cancer and keep you alive and functioning. You need sunlight to function. If you don't have sunlight, you die. And if you live in a dark room with no sunlight, you won't last very long. You'll be vitamin D deficient. You'll have rickets. You'll perish very quickly. We need sunlight to live. And we are compatible with where we are in the cosmos. We are compatible with our orbital distance from the sun. We are compatible with Earth's axis tilt, which gives us our seasons. We are compatible with seasons and tides, tides caused by moon gravity, of course, as it moves around the Earth, and to some extent, solar gravity. We are compatible with this system, the ebb and flow of life on Earth and the ecosystems and the food webs that have sustained us are exactly what we need to continue to sustain us. And yet those are the very things that are being attacked and altered, engineered, and terraformed in order to take them down. Every basic pillar of life that's required by human beings is under attack. And that tells you, just by simple reasoning alone, that the attack is coming from a non-human plan. Or I suppose you could say, maybe you think there's some evil humans who literally want to commit suicide for the whole planet, but I don't believe that's the case. It's clear to me that this is a plan that has a specific purpose, because if you just wanted to murder all life on the planet, if the globalists wanted to do that, they could just launch nukes everywhere. They could just irradiate the whole planet and wipe out everything. Why aren't they using radiation? They're not using radiation because radiation would make the planet uninhabitable to all species. They want to save the planet, but not for us. They want to save Earth. They want to modify Earth, terraform Earth, and save it from human beings, not for human beings. And they certainly don't want to see the planet irradiated, because radiation can't be cleaned up by anybody. If you irradiate a planet and you have cesium-137 all over the place, you've ruined that planet for centuries. No matter what kind of biological you are, no matter what your planet of origin or star system of origin, you don't want radiation all over Earth. So it's not some big suicide cult. It's a specific plan with a very specific outcome to alter the atmosphere and alter the sunlight that gets through, to alter the biosphere for a specific kind of being that plans to be here. And it's not us. That much is very clear. Now, we're going to continue this with additional episodes. You're watching Oblivion Agenda. My name is Mike Adams. I appreciate you joining me for this and for your willingness to entertain some interesting questions, maybe ask some new questions yourself. All the episodes are available for free. They're on oblivionagenda.com. You can go there and watch them all. And I welcome your feedback. We have an email address, oblivionagenda@protonmail.com. If you've got suggestions, or maybe you know something that should be added to this as a follow-up video, please let me know, because I don't claim to have all the answers, but I do claim to have a lot of questions, probably like you. Now, this video and this whole series is supported by the Health Ranger store. If you want laboratory validated, tested, clean foods and supplements, not only the common vitamins like vitamin C and vitamin D and so on, but superfoods, you know, reishi mushroom blends, lab-tested cacao powder, and chocolate drinks that are, you know, tested for cadmium and lead and all the things that tend to be found as contaminants in cacao, and many other products, hundreds of them. We've got products for healthy skin, products for healthy living, products for your home and for nutrition and children and senior citizens alike. Check it out at healthrangerstore.com. You'll be very happy to see our assortment of products there and to know that it's all been lab tested. It's all guaranteed to be clean. We test more than any other retailer in the world, and we manufacture everything that's under our own brand name. We really go to great lengths to bring you clean food because, you know, we're aware of the dangers of lead and cadmium and mercury and all these other things. So we have a multi-million-dollar laboratory facility that runs all these tests in-house. And actually, I've posted a lot of videos that show our lab facility and show us doing the testing and so on. You can check those out at foodforensics.com. See some of those videos there. It's pretty interesting. Like glyphosate in beer, or does aluminum camping gear expose you to aluminum? Well, we answer those questions. We actually do the tests using ICP-MS and triple quad mass spec instruments. It's good science. You can see all that at foodforensics.com. So thanks for watching. Be sure to check out the additional episodes here of Oblivion Agenda. Most of the vitamin C available on the market today is made from genetically modified corn. If you want non-GMO vitamin C, get it from the Health Ranger store. We are certified non-GMO, lab-tested for heavy metals, glyphosate, microbiology, and a lot more. Check out our non-GMO vitamin C at healthrangerstore.com.